Hey guys, this is Scott Ardella. Welcome to episode number 200, where I wanted to do a show to celebrate 200 episodes here on the Ardella Training Podcast. The Ardella Training Podcast is committed to becoming the premier strength and performance podcast interviewing the industry leaders, specifically created for the serious fitness enthusiast, lifter, athlete, coach, trainer, or rehab professional. Now, in this episode, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it's like to create 200 episodes, and I've got some great sound bites for you from past guests, from past episodes, in this episode number 200. It's going to be a really fun and valuable show, and I'll talk a little bit about where we're going after 200. So, as I release this show, I have some really incredible milestones that we just hit. Now, in addition to releasing 200 episodes of the podcast, we now have over a million downloads, and I recently just found out that we were listed in Men's Journal as one of the 8 best fitness podcasts, and I'm incredibly honored and excited about that and reaching 200 episodes and the million downloads and everything else, because it's just such an honor and such a pleasure to do this podcast and to know that it is making a difference. So first, I wanted to say thanks. First of all, I have to thank my wife, Tanya, and my family, my daughters, Alexis and Ava. Without their incredible support, this show would not be happening. And I can't tell you the hours sacrificed to do this show, their understanding, and the times that I asked my family to keep those noise levels down so that I could record here for you. It's been huge, and I haven't publicly thanked them enough about their support for this show. Next, I wanted to thank you, the listener. Thank you so much for all of you who have been here along with me in this journey together. Jean Francois, Jim, Kane, Angelique, Craig, Bruce, Andrew, Kat, Michelle, Rocky, Zach, and so many more that I could continue to name. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of this with me. And finally, thank you to those amazing guests that have been here on the show. I thought about naming everybody that's been here, but honestly, it would take quite a long time to do that. But I really appreciate and honor each and every guest that has been here and has been a part of this show and has been gracious enough to spend time here with me doing these interviews. Now, we've even done some live interview sessions, and they are totally cool to do. I really enjoy doing those, but they are also a ton of extra work to coordinate. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk more about some of the live interviews. I'm going to share one of the live interviews with you during this session. And, you know, the thing about this podcast is that everybody wins. You win by listening and learning and gaining knowledge. I win because I gain new knowledge from the experts. And the experts win because they're coming on the show and sharing their message and sharing the philosophy and the value that all these great guests have. And that's why I really love to do the show, because it makes us all better collectively. Now, speaking of great guests, for the most part, each guest here on the show is handpicked by me or suggested by you, the listener. And there have been some really great guests here along the way. There have been some that have proactively reached out to me to come on the show, and if they were a fit, then they've been here. They've been a part of this. And some people, well, they haven't really been a fit for the show, to be very honest. And I try to keep in mind that this show is about you, the listener, and if a philosophy or a message isn't a fit for the things that we talk about here, then sometimes I do have to decline. But it's all about keeping things consistent in what we talk about here on the show. And so I wanted to share a couple things here before we get into these sound bites, these little excerpts from some of the great podcast sessions that we've had. But let me tell you a little bit about what it takes to do a podcast episode. And keep in mind, this is a free resource. But the truth is that it costs me money to produce a show. It costs me a lot of time and money to do each and every episode. But I do this out of passion to share a message and to help people and to transform people in some way. That's why I do it. So here's what it's like behind 200 episodes. And actually, it's more than 200 because we did 6 episodes of the interrogation series, which was 6 interview sessions, 6 short sessions that we did with people that were listeners to the Ardella Trading Podcast. And I had 6 people come on and share their message and their story. And I thought that was really fun and really valuable to do the interrogation series. So it's actually episode number 206, but we're calling this episode RT200 with the addition of the 6 episodes that were in their own, the interrogation series. So it basically takes about 4 hours per episode, roughly, to do a show. So that's 800 hours or 20 weeks or 5 months of full-time work to produce the content for this podcast. Now, with that said, I want to talk a little bit about sponsors because I want to be fully transparent here. This show needs to be monetized to sustain. That's just the reality. Now, I've passed on products and sponsors in the past that were not a fit for this show or things that I didn't use or feel comfortable discussing or promoting. For this show, I will only recommend things I personally use or endorse. And again, I started this podcast to share a message, but we do need to make this a stronger part of the business model as well. So I will be looking for promotional partners and will be more aggressive in seeking partners and sponsors to support this podcast. I wanted to let you know about that as part of the bigger picture for podcast growth. Now, before we get into the sound bites here that I wanted to share with you in all these 200 episodes, I've got about 4 or 5 sound bites that I'm going to share with you. Now, before we get into the sound bites, make sure to go to ardellatraining.com/join to get some cool free stuff and to become part of the amazing community at Ardella Training. Again, you can go to ardellatraining.com/join. And I hope to see you there, and I hope you become part of the community. Now, I wanted to play a few sound bites from past podcasts. And keep in mind, these are just short clips. Each one is about maybe 3 minutes or so. And the first one we're going to do is really an excerpt from the very first podcast session. Now, when I started the podcast, I started it under a different name called Stealth Body, and then we rebranded to the Ardella Training brand. And there's a story behind that. I'll save that for another time. Actually, it's in some of the past podcast episodes. But when I started episode number 1, it was called Stealth Body. And then we rebranded somewhere around episode 25, 30, something like that. But I thought it was cool to go back and listen to the very first episode. So here's a sample from the opening segment of episode number 1. All right. Welcome to the very first episode of the Stealth Body Podcast. My name is Scott Ardella, and I am your host, and I'm really, really excited to be here doing this podcast for you. And in this episode, this is going to be a short one because I really just want to explain what Stealth Body is and how you can benefit, who it's for, and what's going to be coming. So that's really all I'm going to do here in this introduction episode. So thank you very much for listening and downloading this or however you're listening to it. But again, my name is Scott Ardella. So that is just a quick soundbite from the very first episode, and you kind of have to laugh. I know I was laughing when I went back and listened to that 15-minute short opening episode, but there are a lot of things that are still true that I said in that podcast, and then certainly things that have evolved since then. But it really is amazing to see how much has changed since that very first episode. That was episode number 1, and now here we are, episode number 200. Now, the next soundbite I want to share with you is from an interview with Gray Cook, renowned physical therapist and movement expert, author of the great book, Movement, Gray Cook. And this is a short, maybe 3-minute clip of Gray talking about continuums and movement patterns. And what he's talking about is a DVD that he did along with Dan John. And a really great insight in this. And Gray always shares incredible information. So let's move into the next sound clip from the Gray Cook interview. And this was episode number 100.
Continuums are are really a representation, and Kelly uses this word a lot, of archetypes of movement. You hear me use the word pattern? You'll hear Kelly use the word archetype. The archetype is sort of the ideal philosophical embodiment of a squat, of a press, of a push, of a throw. The pattern, to me, is that measurable thing that makes it possible. So, you know, Kelly and I, if you guys could tune in to just some of our freestyling conversations, you'd hear two adults in the house of females expressing their ADD at light speed. And it's, you know, we're just changing words around. A continuum to me represents in its purest form how a baby will roll before they crawl before they kneel and squat before they walk and walk before they run. And if we could take that and press it to a move like a kettlebell swing or rock climbing or throwing a javelin, we would see that most people are having difficulty expressing that top-tier ability that they wish to have because they skipped over something. So I think it's pretty obvious to most coaches and trainers that a good deadlift is a precursor to a kettlebell swing. So Dan and I didn't really have a lot of argument there articulating that to a group. And I think most of the people who've embraced my work on movement screening would say teaching a deadlift when somebody's leg raise is a one, which means there's no way they can hit a 90-degree hip hinge without rounding their back. The available mobility isn't there. So I think everybody gets that you should approach a deadlift with adequate range of motion. Everybody also gets that a slow pattern like a deadlift should precede a fast pattern like a swing. And we can take that platform of a swing, as I learned in my RKC under Brett Jones and Pavel, and incorporate that swing platform into a snatch, into a clean, into so many other beautiful, even higher order, more complex kettlebell moves. Dan and I laid out that entire continuum to say a continuum is not a progression. A progression is the real life trip that I'm getting ready to take you on. It's going to have detours, a few U-turns, and maybe some rest stops. We may even break down on the way. Okay? The continuum is what Google Maps prints out so me and you can both get to Chicago. That's where we need to be. We need to hit those dots. A detour is what happens when we get injured, sidelined, or our body just doesn't adapt as quickly as we'd like it. We've got a different mental time schedule than our physical body has. So a continuum is a template for how we're going to get there. And a progression is what we owe the person who is paying us to guide them on that trip. It will never be a dot-by-dot connection because we're dealing with human behavior, schedules, fluctuations in the economy, cold and flu season and summer vacation. That's why they call us pros, because we've got to deal with all that BS while still trying to get you to your goal. So the number one thing I try to articulate is you don't stair-step somebody through a continuum just because Gray Cook said so. You watch their level of competency at each step, and if they're incompetent at that step, hold the line.
So I was incredibly honored to interview Gray Cook, and that session was actually broken up into two episodes, episode number 100 and episode number 101. And again, the information he was talking about was the essentials of coaching and training functional continuums that he did along with Dan John. Really outstanding DVD. I'd highly recommend that if you don't have it. Now, the next soundbite comes from Dr. Stuart McGill, the world's leading spine biomechanics expert. And what we're talking about here is the rationale of the big three exercises. This is really brilliant, so let's take a listen. All right, so I do want to ask you about the non-negotiable big three. And this is outlined in a lot of your books, obviously. Your latest book, Back Mechanic, which we're going to talk about here in just a couple of minutes. But I definitely wanted to make sure that we talked about the big three exercises. And if you could explain, I guess, briefly what they are and then why these three are so critical for back health based on your research and experience.
All right. Well, let's go 100% with the research on this. We know that the core is absolutely essential for several reasons. It builds armor to protect collision and combat athletes, and for anyone who has a slip and a fall, for example. We know that the spine, if we were to take the spine out of you and load it in compression, it will start to bend, buckle, and break at 20 pounds. That's all it will hold. So you have to stiffen and stabilize that spine with a guy wire architecture of muscle. We also know that a lot of back pain is caused by instability at joints, so they get little micro movements. So you can imagine in your knee, if you damage a knee ligament, it becomes painful because you've got shearing micro movements. Your spine is exactly the same, but muscular stiffening takes out those painful micro movements. And I've already talked about this idea of proximal stability for distal mobility and athleticism. Yeah. So knowing all of that, and we knew that because we were one of the first ever to measure and quantify spine stability. So after that, we then started to measure many different core exercises to see which ones produced true spine stability, not imaginary clinical stability. We measured it. And then we also had the second criteria, let's ensure spine stability in these people, but do it in a way that doesn't overload their already painful back. So it had to spare the spine. The three exercises that bubbled up to the top, and we did this several different ways, were you had to do an exercise for the front of the core, one for the side, and one for their back. There wasn't an exercise that did it all. And the big three turned out to be down on all fours, the bird dog exercise, and there's many nuances to that. You can do it standing at a table, for example, for those who have had knee replacement. The side plank, and then the modified curl up, which the individual just lays on the floor on their back. They put their hands under their low back, supporting the natural curve, one leg straight and one leg bent, reduces the neural tension for those who have a neural component to their pain mechanism. And then you lift the elbows up, you brace the core, and you tune that. It depends on the pain trigger sensitivity of the individual. And then pretend the head and shoulders are on a bathroom scale. Simply make the scale weigh zero. There's these people who've bastardized our work, and they'll say, oh, here's the big three, and they show it on the internet. And it's nothing close to what we really insist on. And that is just make the scale weigh zero, slightly lift the head and shoulders off the floor, hardly at all, and hold that. And those three exercises turned out to be the very best. And then after that, you build a foundation to reduce pain and build load resilience, and then get them up off the floor and start to build progressions that will take that person through to their goals. And we can talk about those progressions if you like. But anyway, the big three turned out to be the best way to start it off.
That interview session was episode number 161 with Dr. Stuart McGill. And that was a very, very popular episode, loaded with great content. And of course, you just heard some of the great insight from Dr. McGill, and I've really, really enjoyed having him on the podcast. And by the way, I highly recommend his great book, The Back Mechanic. Now, next up is a segment from the Dan John interview. Dan John was on the podcast multiple times, and in this short clip, we talked about the goblet squat and also squatting in general. And if you've ever heard Dan, you know that he always shares great content. That's what I love about having Dan on the show, is that he always shares something new and valuable. And there's so much great insight in the sessions that I had with Dan. So here's just a very small sample. And again, this comes from episode number 147. And we were talking about his book, Before We Go. Before We Go is the name of his book. Let's take a listen.
I did a couple of years ago, I did a series. It's odd because, you know, I don't edit my own work, which is a good thing. But there's five chapters in the book on one's on the push, one's on the pull, one's on the hinge. And then from the hinge, it goes into the swing and the swing family, and then the squat and the loaded carry. Well, the one on goblet squatting was just to talk about my approach to squatting. It's a very simple book. Yeah, the goblet squat is when you take your elbows and you push your knees out. So all those pictures I see in the books that have come out, you know, I invented the goblet squat. There's no question about it. I love it when people say I didn't. And it's like, really? I work in religious studies. So we have to do things like footnote and show sources. And it's show me a source that says goblet squat before. But the goblet squat is not having your elbows go between your knees. The goblet squat is when your elbows push your knees out. And so I try to highlight that. And then I try to explain my belief that if you've got a beat up athlete who still needs to compete, if they just do the movement of squatting, that's pretty good. It's not, and that might be the hardest lesson I've learned in my career, is when I first started lifting, the squat was just a good exercise. And then the squat became the answer to all questions. And now I think that I'm back to the world that the squat is a very important, it's a fundamental movement, but it's not the answer to each and every question. And so getting your squat up to 1,200 pounds is not going to make you an elite football player.
Right.
In fact, it might even destroy your ability to play football. Now, my powerlifters, brothers and sisters, you know what I just said. For you in a contest, you need to squat 1,200 pounds. But for the rest of us, you know, we just don't need that kind of load. Sure. And I mean, and so it's my attempt to teach my squatting system, you know, methods. And powerlifter types hate it.
Let me just ask you, how would you summarize the single biggest benefit of the goblet squat?
Oh, the fact that you can the fact that you can drop in that deep position that stretches out that whole hip area and even your legs and all the great benefits it does. I have to agree with what those guys did a year ago. Remember that 30-minute squat challenge a day where you're supposed to stay in a squat position?
Right.
I agree totally that the human body should spend quality time every day in a deep squat. Yes, probably spend some time hanging every day and probably spend a lot of time walking every day.
Yes.
And if you did those three things, I'm not saying it's a perfect program. There is no such thing. But if you squatted, you know, and hung for and walked, you'd probably be okay. And then sprint when you have to.
Right. So I thoroughly enjoyed each and every interview with Dan. And that was just a sample from one of those great interviews. Again, I'd highly encourage you to go back and listen to Dan's interviews or any of the interviews that I've already played for you so far. They're really, really outstanding and just loaded with content. Now, next up for you is a session that I did with Dr. Kelly Starrett, who was also a multi-guest here. He was appeared on the podcast multiple times here on the Ardella Training Podcast. This particular segment comes from episode number 170, where he discusses over-mobilizing. So he gives some great guidelines around mobilizations and also gives some of the why behind mobilizing. So let's take a listen.
The dangers you'll see is that people will go run with chronic knee pain, right, and collapsed ankles and arch supports, and they're afraid to roll on a ball in their quads. You know, I'm like, come on, like, let's set it up. First and foremost, we try to create guidelines for people that help them not overmobilize, because it's a tissue. It'll bruise if you smash the crap out of it for an hour, right? So let's do this. First and foremost, let's create a few guidelines. If you roll on any part of your body, it should not hurt. So no part of your body should be painful to compression. That's powerful, because when you're basically creating a localized compression, laying on a ball or a foam roll or something like that, a rolling pin, what you've done is you've created high tension in an area. It's an allegory for stiffness in the entire system.
Okay.
So your body should be able to handle that compression and movement without pain. And that's shocking, because most people, the first time they roll, you know, they roll on a white foam roller. They get it like Walmart, right?
Right.
And that white foam roller was invented as a pool toy. It's a pool toy. And if that causes you discomfort in your calves are a hot mess. That's what we want people to understand. But also, we understand that that's where you are. It's no value judgment, just that your calves are a hot mess. Let's start there. So it shouldn't be painful. Two is it also shouldn't be stiff. There's a lot of tissues that become very fibrotic. You know, I encourage everyone listening to go to Gil Headley. Gil Headley has the most amazing resource on the internet, and it's about live dissection. So he is the greatest, most preeminent anatomist I have ever seen. You know, when we talk about the fuzz or breaking up the adhesions, right, the soft connective tissue, you'll see when he goes in and dissects lungs, it's shocking to see how tacked down the lungs are to the viscera, to the walls. And right, these are all should be sliding surfaces, right? And oh, there's that sliding surface language, which is his language. You know, and the sliding surface concept is that, like, you should be like layers of warm silk sliding over steel springs. But a lot of us get really stiff because we don't move and the body protects itself with fascia and connective tissue. And sometimes those things aren't painful. But if you come across a piece of your body that feels like beef jerky, that beef jerky does not stretch or glide. So you're going to have to chew it up. And that's why we need people to understand, hey, it shouldn't be painful. B, it shouldn't feel like beef jerky. Now, here's the key. We've found that if we limit the session to 10 or 15 minutes, and usually I have two sides, that automatically stops the clock. So I'm done. I get as much work as I can in 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll get the rest of it tomorrow. And I'll get the rest of it the day after that. And then if I have a conversation with myself for the next month, I'm going to get dose and response, dose and response. So Kelly, how do I keep from going too deep? Simple. If you can't take a full breath in and a full breath out, you're going too deep. How simple is that? Because we see people foam roll and it's like literally they're bracing for a punch. I got it. Right. And they're holding their breath. Sure. They're firing up their sympathetic nervous system. Yeah. You're telling yourself, dude, you're under threat. There's no way you're going to access those myofascial pieces or some of that neural tone. So you need to have full excursion of the breath. And if you can't take your full breath all the way in, I mean all the way in and to the very bottoms of your diaphragm all the way out, you're going too deep.
So that's just a small sample of one of the interviews with Dr. Kelly Starrett, and he shared some great insight there around mobilizations and his mobilization approach. You can find out more by checking out his great books, Supple Leopard, the latest version of that, and then also Deskbound, which had a major impact on me. I love that book, and I highly recommend it. I recommend both of those books. So great sessions, great people so far, and I decided while I was doing this episode 200 that I was going to share one more with you to close out this episode. So before I do that, I just want to tell you about where we are going with the podcast. Again, the show has to grow. It has to evolve. And I look forward to continuing to do that and making this show better and better to do really what I want to do. And the vision of this show is to become the premier strength and conditioning, strength and performance podcast that is available, and doing it in a very professional way. That's one thing that I really take pride with, in making sure that this show is very professional and gives some of the best content from some of the top thought leaders in the world with you. So that is where things are headed. And speaking of that, stay tuned for next week, because I've got a great interview session and a thought leader coming your way. I know you're going to love next week's session. So right now we're going to close things down. I mentioned in the beginning something about doing a live interview, and this is the very first live interview session I did with Frank McKinney. Now, Frank is not a fitness guy, but he is an incredible human being and really one of the guys that I've been fortunate enough to get to know down here in South Florida. He is a mega real estate investor. He is a ultra marathon runner and a great humanitarian. And he is going to talk about motivation, inspiration, and aspiration. And this is something that really, really stuck with me and really had an impact with me. And I thought it was such a perfect way to conclude episode number 200. I don't know if you've heard this before or not, but I can tell you that it is extremely powerful, even if you have heard it. And if you haven't heard it, I think you're in for a real treat and something very profound, I guess, is a good word to describe it. So let's listen to Frank McKinney to close out episode number 200 and hear what he has to say about motivation, inspiration, and aspiration. Thank you for joining me for episode number 200, a major milestone here on the show. And I look forward to seeing you again next week here on the Ardella Training Podcast. Right now, let's close it down with Frank McKinney. Enjoy.
Motivation. Okay. So Scott's he's very motivating in his book, and we all want to be motivated to look like him and train like him. Motivation, though, washes off in the shower and goes down the drain with the soap at night. So you should feel good about that. Why can't I stay motivated to exercise? Why can't I stay motivated to eat well? Why can't I stay motivated in my relationship? You know what? Because motivation was never meant to last. You should be relieved, people. That is a nice thing to know. I'm not motivated for much longer than a day. You read a motivational quote. How quick does that wear off?
Right.
So motivation washes off, goes down the drain with a soap at night. Inspiration. I can read an inspirational book. I can watch an inspirational movie. Inspiration wears off like the effects of a bad sunburn. In other words, it lasts a little longer than motivation, but eventually it dissipates. Aspiration. Aspiration. Who do you aspire to emulate? What legacy do you aspire to leave behind? Aspiration will alter your DNA. It will forever change your life and the lives of those you love. If I step back and look what I aspired to, I've only aspired to a handful of things in my entire adult life. That's all.
Yeah.
And by aspiring to, I didn't motivate to them. Right. I didn't inspire to them. I aspired. Now, motivation and inspiration can ignite aspiration, but ain't going to carry the day. You have to, who do I aspire to emulate? What legacy do I aspire to leave behind? Answer those questions for yourself. And then watch your DNA be changed. I wasn't a 135-mile runner.
Yeah,
I aspired to become one. I wasn't a 5-time best-selling author. I aspired to become one. I wasn't a real estate artist building these houses on speculation for tens of millions of dollars. I aspired to become one.
Yeah,
the charity is the same thing. I aspired to run a charity, a big one with impact. Motivation would have never carried the day. Neither would inspiration, but aspiration will. We'll just leave it on that.